May it please the Court, I'm Jim Bisno. I'm attorney for Louis Villegas, the petitioner and appellant here. And I've noticed that there's some celebrity cases going on in our city. Jackson, Blake, Spector. And one thing these cases all have in common is all these guys fired their lawyers. In fact, they fired a number of lawyers. And so suppose, hypothetically, today, lawyer number one calls up Michael Jackson and says, Michael, I think you ought to have a court trial. Or, Michael, I think you should go on self-defense. Or, I think you ought to, your attorney ought to file 995. Well, Michael Jackson would be saying, you know, I fired you 3 lawyers ago. I have no duty to depend on you. You have nothing to do with my case. And I think he'd be right. I think it'd be unreasonable to think otherwise. And yet, in the evidentiary hearing in this case, it was the testimony of the discharged lawyer that seemed to be material and convincing, not only to the Superior Court, but to the magistrate in the district court.
Counsel, now, the first lawyer, Mr. Dougherty, he testified that he did not tell your client that the life without the possibility of parole was a mandatory sentence.
I think it was Dougherty who testified he did.
No, I'm looking at it. And he said that he didn't say, he says, was that mandatory? This is the questioning. What did you tell him the penalty would be? Life without the possibility of parole. Was that mandatory or discretionary with the court? Mandatory. I didn't think it was discretionary at the time. Okay. And did you convey that to Mr. Villegas? I don't think it was ever discussed.
Well, then I'll go with that, Your Honor.
Well, this is your case.
Yes,
you should be going with that.
Judge Milton, the Superior Court judge, made a finding that he said it was mandatory.
But how do you analyze that under AEDPA?
I would.
If he makes a finding that's clearly contradicted by the underlying testimony.
I think it's an unreasonable determination in light of the evidence, and I also think that it's the state decision rests on an unreasonable evidentiary foundation based on a defective and faulty fact-finding process, as the circuit said in Taylor versus Maddox. And to me, what this case is about is that the Court of Appeal basically asked the Superior Court, they said, we're finding that he didn't advise him that it was mandatory, and we're finding that the State offered 15 to life. We just want you to find one thing. Would he have accepted the 15 to life if he knew that the life without parole was mandatory, or did he have an unswavering or unswerving desire to go to trial no matter what. And it really had to do with Mr. Villegas' thought processes. This was a young man. He was 18 years old. He was not present at the scene of the murder. He did not know that there was going to be a killing. He did not intend that there was going to be a killing. He had no record. He didn't get along with Mr. Dougherty, lawyer number one, because Dougherty never came and visited him in Wayside, where he was housed for a year before his mom got the money to hire a lawyer. And
the State Court of Appeals direction to the Superior Court, was that consistent with the prejudice prong?
Well, in the respect that
they said determine whether or not he would have accepted the deal.
Or whether he would have, or whether he was going to go to trial in any case. Yes. And I think that that is
was that burden too high?
For who? I'm not sure I understand.
Well, why did he have to show? I mean, isn't the test reasonably probable that he would have accepted the deal instead of finding that he would have?
Yes, I see what the court is saying, and probably it was stated in too high a burden for the petitioner.
But you didn't argue that, did you?
I didn't argue that.
Why not?
Frankly, I didn't think it was necessary. I thought that the
Do you think it's appropriate for us to decide the case based on the facts for unreasonable determination of the facts?
In the light of the proceeding under the D2 prong, yes.
Well, is that since the standard, the constitutional standard, is a question of law, don't we have the discretion to consider that issue, whether, you know, if we decide to, because it's a question of law, not of fact, even though you didn't argue it.
Are you saying, can you look back and say that the California Court of Appeal, in its order to the Superior Court, was itself an unreasonable order? I would say
an unreasonable application of Strickland's prejudice.
Yes. Yes. The
Strickland court talks in terms of, is it reasonably probable?
Yes. And I think the court could do that if it wants to look at the Court of Appeal ruling, yes. I think that one thing that, and I think this is clear from what the jury foreman said in the excerpts of record, because it's clear from my client's statements to the police and the whole way that played out, is that he is an 18-year-old follower, not the leader, not a sophisticated person. He's exactly the person who had a right to depend on the last lawyer. And I think he did, and I think that's where there wasn't ineffectiveness here, prejudicial ineffectiveness, this court should send this case back, reverse the district court, and allow him to order the prosecution to give him the 15 to life offer that it made. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the Court, Robert C. Schneider, Deputy Attorney General for Respondent Appellee. Mr. Doherty told Mr. Villegas that the sentence would be life without possibility of parole. Whether or not he used the word mandatory in the discussion that followed obviously was totally irrelevant.
Why was that so irrelevant?
Because Mr. Villegas was not the least bit interested in hearing about that sentence. He wanted to get
that
out.
How can you say that?
Because he told the court, and he told the court, the trial court in a letter, that I thought I should be getting a suspended sentence. And that was his position all along. He was not interested in discussing. That is why there was a falling out between Mr. Doherty and Mr.
But
Villegas.
If he had been told it was mandatory, doesn't that make a difference?
It makes a difference to somebody who is going to listen to reason and listen to his attorney, but Mr. Villegas was not going to listen to his reason or listen to an attorney. That's why he got upset with Mr. Duarte. Mr. Duarte testified, as soon as I told him the facts of this case, our relationship disintegrated. He didn't want to hear the facts. Why would hearing one more fact have made any difference?
Well, I suppose that's a pretty serious fact, whether your sentence is going to be mandatory versus something that's within the discretion of the trial court judge.
But if you're going to be acquitted, why would you take, if you believe you're going to be acquitted because this was merely an accident, and you were only in the wrong place at the wrong time, why would you accept 15 to life?
Let's assume that Doherty, he didn't talk about mandatory, but he said life without possibility of parole, and Mr. Villegas just didn't listen to him. He gets the new lawyer, Mr. Moses. Mr. Moses thinks he advises the client the entire time and does the trial thinking that the sentence was not going to be mandatory.
He did the entire pre-trial and trial thinking he was going to get the man acquitted. And then Mr. Villegas wanted to walk free. He wasn't thinking about being convicted. If he thought about being convicted, if he took responsibility for his actions, he would have taken 15 to life and run with it.
Well,
he wanted to be acquitted.
Every court said that he had deficient assistance of counsel. He was deficient. Every court has said that.
Was it prejudicial?
Now, that's the crux of the
issue. It's not prejudicial because Mr. Villegas was not interested in hearing about sentences. He was interested in hearing about a suspended sentence or acquittal. Mr. Doherty gave him the facts. He didn't want to hear it. Mr. Moses may very well, in his deficiency, give him hope, but the hope was only feeding what Mr. Villegas was interested in beginning with. Acquit me, let me have a suspended sentence. Mandatory, 25 to life, 15 to life, same to me. Is that the same to you? That's 10 years longer mandatory prison sentence. It meant no difference to him. Mr. Villegas thought he was not culpable. The prejudice, that's where the prejudice comes down. You could have told him mandatory, mandatory. He was interested. His mindset was, it was just an accident, wrong place, wrong time. I want to be acquitted. If that's his mindset, then this court has to find that it's unreasonable to find that he would have decided, no, my mindset is I want acquittal, but the word mandatory, now I changed. That's unreasonable. He would not have changed. That's what the court found below. He thought, whoever his own mental process might be, which is not for us to question, he thought he was going to get acquitted at the very least a suspended sentence, the very most a suspended sentence. Why would the word mandatory suddenly fall into this? And there's no one says that that word wasn't discussed. Mr. Moses, after a great deal of prodding, finally admitted, incredible person that he was, that he did discuss it. He probably would have discussed it. He always discussed important issues with his client.
But he didn't know. He also testified he didn't know that the law
told him
changed.
That's a sentence. That LWOP would be there.
No, but he didn't know that it was mandatory.
As though mandatory would make any difference. And mandatory, of course, that word would have had nothing, no impact on Mr. Villegas, who was not in a listening mode. He was not using his listening ears, as they say to children. He wanted to quit it. Mr. Villegas could have heard the word mandatory all day long. I want to quit it. Even after he's convicted, he's telling the trial judge, I want a joint suspended. That's what I was going to take. Even then, he was looking at a suspended sentence.
That's what puzzles me about your argument, is that you're saying he wanted a suspended sentence, but, of course, that's an impossibility.
Of course, because he wasn't
no
a
one
reason.
No one told him that.
No one told him that. He was listening. He thought he was not culpable. Under his own vision of the world, which he has a right to have, is wrong. But his wrong vision of the world, his wrong personal moral values about his culpability, which led him to believe he should have a suspended sentence, can't inform this court other than on the issue of prejudice. Was this particular man prejudiced? Would anything that anybody said to him make any difference? No. But is that unreasonable for him as an individual? Of course. But he's a gangster and a robber and a murderer. He has a very different lifestyle than people who are reasonable. He, in his mind, it was just an accident. Just an accident. Wrong place, wrong time. That didn't change. And no one says he didn't hear 15 to life. Everybody says that. But he still thinks he should have got a suspended sentence. Is that reasonable? Of course not. That's irrelevant to our discussion.
Getting back to the question I asked counsel, did the State Court of Appeal give the proper direction to the Superior Court?
I think the State Court of Appeal sent it back to examine the prejudice problem.
What did they say?
You know, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't have the exact quote of the order here. I apologize.
Wasn't it to determine whether he would have accepted it?
That may have been the language. And
that was it or wasn't the language?
I'm sorry, I can't quote.
It was the language, wasn't it?
If it was.
He didn't use the term. The court didn't use the term reasonably probable.
No. If you've read
didn't
that.
Didn't have a prejudice standard under Strickland?
That is, I don't know if they were, if the court intended to set the standard, though. I think the court.
Well, what would you do if you were a Superior Court judge?
I would do what the judge found and went through and found that, in fact, he did not and would not have, which is not that he even probably would have, but he would not.
There's nothing in the discussion of by the Superior Court that he was asked to determine whether or not it was reasonably probable.
But his findings were that he would not have.
Well, is reasonably probable the same as would have?
I think so.
It is?
I think that
you don't see any difference in the standard.
I think that the judge in this case found that based upon Mr. Villegas' background, his view of this, he would not have accepted the sentence. And that was a factual finding that he would historically go back in time. He would not have changed his position. And that, I think, is more than a reasonable problem. It's not a reasonable probability.
But do you think that imposed too high of a burden on Mr. Villegas?
I don't think that the Superior Court was even thinking about what the order
is. It's an objective versus a subjective standard.
The subjective.
What he would have done relates to him. Reasonable probability is what a reasonable person would do.
I don't think there's a reasonable person standard in a prejudice decision because it's based very much on the individual. A reasonable person would have taken 15 to life and run with it. Mr. Villegas wasn't reasonable, but that's not the standard. We can't have prejudice based upon an unreasonable defendant. This was his third attorney. He was not a particularly cooperative individual. But he would not have accepted it. When the court made a factual finding that because of his view of his own culpability, regardless of what was given to him, he would have rejected the people's offer, that was a finding of fact that he would have not he probably wouldn't have not, would have accepted it. It was an absolute fact finding based upon historical view of what would have happened, not what might have happened. But I don't think that the Superior Court was thinking about what the Court of Appeal sent it back with. He did not, without reading the order. Sometimes I've seen that, where they actually look at the order and say, the Court of Appeal said this, and here the Court was making factual findings. He would not have made a difference. Regardless of what the Court of Appeal may have said in its his remand order. In this case, this court, sitting as evidentiary hearing officer, made a fact of finding he would not have taken anything different. Was Mr. Villegas reasonable? No. But he was aware of a possibility, and any nuance to that possibility, mandatory or not, would have absolutely no impact on his decision that he was not culpable. He was not going to listen to anyone tell him the contrary, including after he was convicted. His mind was made up, unchanged by the facts, unchanged by the law, unchanged by the advice of three attorneys and finding of a jury of his peers. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Villegas versus Yearwood is submitted for decision. U.S. versus Berrigan is also submitted.